This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Bees are a critical part of our ecology. If we lose the bees, then we lose the flowering food supply that depend upon the pollination job of the bees, and we are losing bees. What's happening? Well, it's a mystery. There's no definite answer yet, but a lot of people have some ideas. One of them is our guest, Dennis von Ingelsdorp. He's with the Department of Entomology at the University of Maryland. He's written a report looking at pesticides. And so, Dennis, tell me, welcome to The Source. And tell me what you think, how bad is it with the bees? Where are we now with the bees?
Yes, hi. Well, and thank you for having me. We've been conducting a winter loss survey for the last 6 years, and we found that one in three colonies dies on average every winter, and that's been consistent for 6 years, and that's really quite alarming. And you have to put that in context that over the last 60 years, we've lost half of the managed honeybee colonies in this country. And so honeybees have been in decline for a long time, and recently the rate of loss has really increased. And we're concerned about that because we don't think that beekeepers who are able to replace those winter losses by splitting colonies will be able to do so for much longer and stay in business.
So talk about the job that bees do. Why are we so dependent upon them?
Right. So if you look at our diet, anything that's a fruit, vegetable, or nut needs, directly or indirectly, needs an insect to pollinate it. And honeybees are our most versatile and abundant pollinating service. And so one in every three bites of food we eat is directly or indirectly pollinated by honeybees. So without them, we won't starve, but certainly we wouldn't have the apples, we wouldn't have the berries, we wouldn't have the nuts in our diet, so that variety in our diet. And to meet that pollination demand, more than half of the colonies in the country aren't used principally for honey production, but they're moved around on trucks to pollinate different crops. So, for instance, a farmer may start the year by pollinating apples in Pennsylvania, then going up to Maine to pollinate blueberries, Massachusetts to pollinate cranberries, New Jersey or Delaware to pollinate cucumbers or watermelons, then do some pumpkins again in Pennsylvania, then down to Florida for a spell, and then and the most important pollination event is California almonds. And in February, you in fact find half of the colonies in the country in California to pollinate the almond crop.
These are areas where there's so much vast acreage of the almond trees that there's no way that they could just use the bees that they might have occurring naturally in that area.
Well, right, and you're exactly right. 80% of the world almonds are pollinated or are grown in California. And so what you have is you have this intense period where there's a lot of flowers, and so it's really good for bees. But after that flowering goes away, there's nothing much left for the bees to eat on. And so the Central Valley in California couldn't support the bee population it needs to pollinate the almond crop. And that's true in many agricultural regions where you have this intense period of bloom and then you don't have much left. You also start spraying pesticides, of course, after the bloom, and that would negatively impact the bees too. So we depend, our agricultural system depends on a movable pollination force.
So let's go to the phones. If you want to jump in on this conversation, if you've got a question or a comment about what's happening to the bees, a theory of yours, give us a call, 614-8980, 614-8980. Herb from Canyon Lake wants to join us, and you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you very much for the program. This is very important to me and a lot of my friends at Canyon Lake. About 10 months ago, 11 months ago, I noticed that the honeybees were feeding off of hummingbird feeders that I had placed around my deck near the lake. And I also noticed that due to the drought, there's a terrible lack of flowers. There's nothing for these bees to eat. So I started finding what I thought was the best way to feed them, and I ended up using something like an orange drink from Fanta or something like that. And I'm still feeding them with the hummingbird feeders. Now I've increased the number of apparatus where the bees can feed. I went from about 200 to about 3,000, according to a neighbor of mine who used to raise bees. I don't have a colony. I don't have any beehives. I don't have anything like that. But I am feeding these bees simply because I believe desperately that we need them and that they're in jeopardy and that we're destroying their environment by use of pesticides and other things. So I'm trying to keep them alive. Am I doing the right thing by trying to feed these bees? They're not pollinating flowers because there's no flowers for them to pollinate due to the drought. So I'm feeding them orange drink, sugar drinks, and they seem to be thriving on it. So please help me. I'm trying to figure out if I'm doing the right thing.
All right, Herb, thank you for that call. So, Dennis, what do you think about feeding the bees Fanta orange?
Well, I actually think that your motivation is really good. I think that providing habitat and food for bees is a really important thing. Orange drink, yes, bees will go to it. The first thing I would ask, though, is to make sure that you're talking about honeybees and you're not talking about wasps and hornets. And a lot of people confuse the two. If it has hair, it's a bee. If it's bald, it's a wasp and hornet. And wasps and hornets also go. They're very notorious for going to soda or pop cans and drink and sugar water as well. So I would differentiate between the two and make sure you're feeding honeybees. The next thing I would say is that a honeybee colony is very amazing, and that the fact that a forager bee, if it finds a good food source, can go back to the colony and dance a special dance to tell where the other bees in that colony where that food source is. So you would have tens of thousands of bees visiting that source if honeybees had been recruited to it. And so instead of feeding sugar syrup, which beekeepers do, and I think that if they're managed bees, you want beekeepers to keep care of those and feed those bees, the better, I think the perhaps the other alternative, which is much more interesting for you as well, would be to plant pollinator plants and water those and keep those around. And that way you won't have this huge number of bees, but you'll be providing pollen and nectar to these bees, as well as the thousands of other native bee species in this country. Honeybees were introduced with the Europeans when they came over from Europe. But there are thousands of solitary bees that live in this country too. And by planting pollinator gardens, we're helping them. And we know that they're in trouble too. There are about three species of bumblebees, for instance, we think have gone extinct in the last 20 years. So helping out native bees as well as honeybees by planting pollinator gardens would be the way I would encourage you to help the bees.
Yeah, I hear about Texas native mason bees, which is, they don't hive and create honey like our honeybees.
Right. So those aren't social bees. What they do is the female will go out and collect pollen and then lay a single egg on a pollen mass, and then that egg will eat, the larva hatching from that egg will eat that pollen mass, and a new adult bee will emerge, usually the next year. And so there's all sorts of really cool native bees. Some nest in holes and wood, some nest in the ground, some make mud houses. So there's a whole variety of really interesting native bees.
Another thing that Herb brings up is that, you know, bees, they need water. They need a source of fresh water. And then during this drought, that's another stressor that's put on the hives.
Well, that's true. And they usually will go to puddles of water, usually muddy water, and they do need water. If your beekeepers, if they're concerned about it, will often leave a dripping faucet or something that the bees can go to, or they can go to a pool of water.
We're going to continue our conversation about what's happening to the bees. If you've got a question or comment, 614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX.
Good afternoon, it's 3:45. I'm Steve Short. There is a major accident on eastbound Loop 410 at Babcock. Two right lanes are closed. Traffic is backed up in the area. Also, watch out for an accident reported on northbound Highway 151 at Callahan. A collision's been reported on northbound I-35 at O'Connor and also on westbound Loop 1604 at La Conterra Parkway.
KSTX traffic is made possible by rentatoyotasanantonio.com.
It's going to turn cloudy tonight with a low around 78. It'll be sunny and hot on Tuesday with a high near 101. Currently, it's 101 degrees with a heat index of 104.
The Texas Public Radio member card is a valuable addition to your pocketbook. Many local businesses honor your card for special discounts and privileges. Visit our website at tpr.org for a listing of participating businesses and details on the offers available to you as a supporter of KSTX.
This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about what's happening with our bee population, a critical part of our agricultural business and our ecology. They are dropping off with this mystery colony collapse syndrome. With us to help us talk about this and explain is Dennis Van Engelsdorp. He is with the Department of Entomology with the University of Maryland. And you have written a report that says that points the finger at pesticides. Talk about that some.
Right. So early on in 2006, 2007, we found really high levels of losses in the winter, and that really started a lot of investigations. At the time, we hoped that we would find one single cause, and we haven't done that. And so our leading theory now is that it's multiple causes working together in synergy. And so we have honeybee diseases and pests, the most important being the varroa mite, which is this large parasitic vampire mite that sucks the blood of bees and passes on viruses. We have pesticides, both the pesticides beekeepers apply to control varroa mite and pesticides that are found in the field and that bees bring back, or nutrition. And increasingly, because of drought, as just mentioned, or because of the price of corn, a lot of meadows have been plowed under and planted with corn or soybeans, which aren't good for bees. And so we think it's a combination of these three factors. In this study we just performed, what we tried to do was see if there was any evidence for this synergistic effect. And so what we did was we brought colonies to different farms where they were pollinating crops and collected the pollen. And then we looked at that collected pollen and we analyzed it for pesticides. And then we fed some of that pollen to young bees and then exposed them to a disease to see if they were more or less likely to get sick from that disease. And what we found were that fungicides, which was a real surprise, that fungicides don't kill bees directly, but if there was fungicide in some of this pollen, the bees were two times or more likely to catch the disease they were exposed to. So this was evidence in support of our hypothesis that multiple things are coming together to cause bees to become weak and possibly die. And so here we have an evidence of a chemical we never thought was actually harmful for bees acting in a way that it made the bees more susceptible. And so it's put that fungicides in general up for closer scrutiny.
The European honeybee is now used around the world and is this happening globally?
Certainly there have been reports of very high levels of loss in many places around the world, including Europe, Canada, and in Asia and Japan. So there have been reports of losses. Whether all those losses are caused by the same thing is still unknown. Which, of course, supports this idea that it's multiple things that can act together to cause mortality. Certainly the leading cause of mortality is varroa mites, but it seems that it's a lot more complicated than just blaming this one very important parasite of bees.
Let's go to the phones. Cameron is on the line. Cameron, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Cameron.
First of all, I want to concur that I believe that it's a number of contributing factors that are affecting the honeybee. I myself am a fourth-generation beekeeper from Moore, Texas, and I've noticed that the bees that are most affected by this, by CCD, are the bees that are being transported for pollination. A number of other contributing factors I think might have an effect are the fact that they are being fed so much sugar water, because if you look at children, if you feed generations of kids candy and other unhealthy products, you're going to end up with a very unhealthy child. And it's the same thing with bees. If you continue to feed them sugar water, you're going to end up with an unhealthy bee.
All right, Kevin, let me see what the professor's got to say about that. So, Dennis, what do you think? Could the sugar water or the corn syrup, could that be a problem?
Well, yeah, I guess there were two questions there, so I'll answer that, the sugar water question, in a second. But it's often said that it's the transportation of bees that caused this high mortality. And one of the things that we do is we conduct this annual survey through the Bee Informed Partnership, where we try to establish what the winter loss numbers were, and we ask about certain management techniques. And consistently, beekeepers who move bees for pollination lose fewer colonies than those who don't. And so that's been consistent over 6 years of survey. So if there is a stress, and there probably is a stress to moving bees, those beekeepers are good enough that they can somehow compensate for the stress. So I don't know that that's the underlying cause. We also often hear this idea of the sugar water. But remember, sugar is derived from plants. And if we look at nectar, which the bees are collecting from flowers, that's sugar as well, and that's still sucrose that the bees are bringing back to the hive and then condensing down into honey. So I'd be surprised, and again, our survey doesn't support the fact that sugar water is a leading risk factor in mortality. But I do think you bring up a good point that bees need to have good nutrition. And the other side of that coin is not only do they need the carbohydrates like the sugar, they also need the protein, which is the pollen. Bees are true vegetarians in that they get all their protein from pollen. And what we have to make sure is that the bees are also fed pollen. So if you're supplementing with carbohydrates, you also need to be supplementing with with protein.
Back to the phones. Gus is on the line. Gus, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I had a question for your guest. I live in Burney, and I contacted our Texas Congressman, Lamar Smith, and asking about any ways that we could take action in order to help the bees. And he said the response was there was some agricultural committee that was taking care of it, and it seems difficult to track down. So then again, on a national level, this is a question to your guest. What would be the best way for, you know, Joe Smith, a regular person, to really show their support and to have their voice heard on a national level? What would be the thing that they could do to, join the cause or help the cause?
All right, Gus, thank you for the question. What can people do?
Well, I think that there are two levels to that question. One is, what can you do immediately in your personal life? And there, I think that there are three things you can do. One is, think about becoming a beekeeper. And beekeeping is perhaps the most enjoyable, relaxing occupation you can have, because you have to get into the zen of beekeeping. You have to be relaxed, otherwise the bees let you know, and it's nearly a magical experience. Here are these thousands of insects working together in cooperation, making this liquid gold. Having said that, I know beekeeping isn't for everyone, but everyone should open a hive once so that you know if you are a beekeeper or not. But if you're not, you can also help by planting a pollinator garden and not using insecticides and pesticides in that garden. And the third thing you can do is buy local honey and support your local beekeepers. Nationally, there are a lot of initiatives that have come up to Congress. The last farm bill, which you probably know hasn't passed, there was a section in there trying to increase pollinator habitat. So the conservation land where farmers are being paid to keep land fallow and allow that to be pollinator habitat. Also, a good question is why do we have the sides of the highways and all that green grass and mowed? If we let that grow into flowering meadows, that would be good habitat for bees. And so there's a lot of initiatives in that last farm bill that are pollinator friendly. And I think that if you can go to websites like the Xerces Society, that's Xerces, or you go to pollinator.org, which is the national campaign, or the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign. They promote a lot of actions federally, trying to get laws that are bee-friendly. And I think there are a lot of things we can do in that way. So I really appreciate your interest that way. And I think it can really have an impact.
Now, this is not just with bees. We're also having problems with lack of biodiversity for butterflies, especially with the monarch not having the milkweed.
Well, that's right. And pollinators as a group are really keystone species. They're the species that a lot of other biodiversity depends on, because if you lose the bees, you lose plants, and you lose certain species of flowering plants. And so it's a really critical species. And, of course, what we're worried about is this loss of pollinators in general is sort of the canary in the coal mine. It's telling us that there's something really wrong with the environment that we need to fix. Certainly some of the challenges that other pollinators are facing are shared with honeybees.
Now, I've done a little beekeeping myself. You can get started for about $300 for the kit, and including the bees. But I got invaded by these wax moths that just ate up the hive.
Yes. So wax moths are basically, they destroy colonies that are already weak and dying, so that they're sort of a symptom of something else that's going on. And so there are certainly challenges with beekeeping. And so I think the key to keep wax moths out is to just keep the colonies really strong, because bees are very hygienic. They're able to search out problems and get rid of problems like the wax moth when the colony is sufficiently strong.
Now, is research being properly funded to try and combat this situation? Because we've gone over how critical the bees are.
Right. Well, I think that there's, if you, we look at the magnitude of the problem and we look at the magnitude and the importance of bees, I don't think we can say that there's enough funding going on, because there are more and more questions every time we ask a research question. And I think that I do think though that there have been some other sources of funding that have come in. Places like Haagen-Dazs and Costco have come up forward realizing the importance of bees and have started some funding initiatives, which is really encouraging. We're seeing some other foundations step up and do honeybee research. And I think the state and federal governments have been funding, but certainly there's a need for a lot more, because we certainly have a lot more questions than we have answers.
And real quickly, I mean, I've heard some conspiracy theories about well-placed funding of lobbyists trying to keep these pesticides that are challenging the bees on the market.
Well, certainly there's a lot of controversy about what pesticides are to blame, and I think that there's still need to make sure that we are seeing colony-level effects before chemicals are banned.
Okay, yep. We've got to go. We're out of time, but thank you so much. Dennis von Engeldrop, Department of Entomology, University of Maryland, talking about bees. This is The Source.
The Source is a production of Texas Public Radio. Paul Flav produces the show. Oversight is provided by TPR Program Director Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor, and production assistance comes from Catherine Dixon. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.